Hi, I'm Matt McFarland, and we're putting the humor in horticulture on the growing season right here on News Talk, Saga 960 AM. Shovel along with us. Ladies and gentlemen, get out your slinkies, because we're shoveling. This is the growing season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. I'm Matt McFarland, as you know, and as I am every single week. And speaking of every single week, I am pleased to be joined, as I am on a weekly basis, around the table by Jack McFarland and his lovely wife, Lynn. She gets lovelier by the minute. It's insane, the loveliness.
Oh, my.
Speaking of slinkies and putting a spring in my dad's step, Mom, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Father?
Beyond wonderful, Matthew.
Wonderful. Yeah. Beyond wonderful. That's, I'm not even sure what that is. Beyond wonderful sounds like it involves illicit narcotics.
Stupendous.
Okay. Yeah. So, speaking of slinkies, a.k.a. spring, because slinkies are springs.
I thought maybe you were thinking that we gave you slinkies for Easter.
Speaking of spring.
Just like what?
And slinkies. Slinkies are springs. We are continuing to celebrate spring. In fact, there's been some interesting developments with that season with regards to the growing season, which we will chat about on the other side. But this week is part two to our Celebrating Spring series. It follows last week's, which was part one. Coincidentally, if there was a part three, it would be next week, and that would make sense because one is followed by two is followed by three. Yes?
Three, it's all about pruning.
All right.
And there's actually a number four.
And there's a number four.
And there's a number four. So this is going to be like the Avatar films in that there's going to be 72 parts to this. Now, granted, Avatar 93 and 104, they come out in 45 years. So hopefully parts three and four of this series don't take that long. Yes?
Yes.
No.
Awesome. Awesome. This is The Growing Season brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Ladies and gentlemen, it is almost that time. Okay, it's almost that time. Stay with us. Celebrating Spring, Part 2. And let's get ready to shovel! Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. The show continues, a.k.a. starts. Emily McFarland, as you do every single week with your bunny ears on, please, and your chocolate-covered raisins, please bring us in.
Ladies and gentlemen, start your engine.
Awesome. Yes, chocolate-covered raisins. You know that bunnies make little...
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Kind of rude.
What?
Bunnies making...
Bunnies do that.
We don't mention the word slinky on air.
No, we try not to. Yeah, that's now the third time.
But I like
in the
chocolate
last...
covered raisins.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks, Mom. I appreciate it. Okay, so we talked a little bit about some interesting developments with the growing season on the previous side. So many of you know that the Weather Network, we are now sort of linked, tied in with them. You are able to see me in the mornings, not necessarily sure how many mornings throughout the course of the week on the Weather Network, but I'm doing horticultural radio segments, not radio, video segments with the lovely and talented Victoria on the Weather Network. And again, theweathernetwork.com is the website to go to see all of those because they're going to be in high rotation, hopefully, as well as interesting development on the install side of things. The growing season has become known for many a thing, and many of those things involve rock and or a high amount of plant materials, mostly in like a country cottage slash woodland slash setting. So recently we had the opportunity to go and look at a job that is modern. And I'm super excited about it because we seem to not get calls for that nearly as much as the other things. Now, what I would imagine is that, you know, Frank tells Judy across the street, Lynn! Frank says, listen, these guys are really good at this and they do this well. And if you're looking for this, call the growing season. I'm super excited to be working on a large scale, modern landscape design. One of the things that is interesting is when you work on a large design, I would call it like a semi-rural property. We're not talking about a subdivision lot here. This is a bigger one. And the fun part here is that I get to set where the driveway goes. It's that big. We're not just talking about, oh, this is the front flower bed, this is that. We're talking about designing where the driveway goes.
We even had to take into consideration where the fire hydrant was located.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. I can't wait to get my claws into it, and we'll keep you updated on how things go. But it's modern. They want a very modern, very angular concrete water feature out front with some room for plantings and large trees, armor stone walls. This could turn into the project that we end up talking about throughout the summer. Speaking of the project that we're going to end up talking about throughout the summer.
Wait a minute. One more thing, Matt.
Yes.
Listeners, in this particular project, the wife really is not super fond of modern, so she wanted to make sure that to soften it, maybe more with various compact type of perennials and so forth.
Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting thing. Again, growingseasoncanada.com is the website. Click on Design and Build. You'll see updates for this project as well as, speaking of this project, many of you by now have seen splashed all over the website the 6 minute and some odd second video for McFarland Park. Many thanks to Mike Mazurek for compiling all of our footage. It was hundreds of hours of footage, whether it be on drone or on phone or whatever. So if you haven't seen that yet, click on growingseasoncanada.com, click on Design and Build. Right at the top of the page is the build for McFarland Park. Why does that apply here? Well, McFarland Park is going to be growing. We're going to be getting aquatic. Yes?
Yeah.
There is a water feature being installed. It was always part of the plan, and we just didn't get to it last year. So again, we're going to be updating that video. You'll see shots of our water feature install. We haven't done a water feature in a number of years, and we're excited.
How to?
Yeah. And we're excited to kind of get back into that. Easter, where do we begin, guys?
Mom.
You begin with me.
Go.
Happy Easter, listeners. Now, before I get into a discussion about Easter and why some of these things happen at Easter, I have some news to share.
Pregnant.
No, that would be a lot of explaining. And at my age, yes. No, yeah. It would be a lot of explaining.
Dad's pregnant.
No.
Kind of,
yeah.
What?
In the not too distant future, Jack is going to be going on the DL list. And when he comes back to do the show, which he will be, his voice may sound a little different, or he may be quieter. So,
thank God!
Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of gaps to fill. So because of this, I've been called up from the minors.
Okay.
And I've been asked to do an at-bat in the major leagues, and I'm rather scared, so wish me luck.
Yeah, now Mom's going to see, what happens is here at the growing season, we don't wear white pants because when Mom goes up to her first at-bat, she may soil herself, and you can see that through white pants.
I was hoping that all the dirt at first base would hide that.
Nice.
But listeners, moving forward, this is kind of on the serious side, and I would love a lot of positive thoughts, and so that you need every positive thought that you can get, and truthfully, I'm a bit on the nervous side, or afraid, if you might say.
Yeah, so there's been some health issues happening in behind the scenes here. We're not going to get too deep into it because that is not my place to do. That's up to Jack McFarland. But there's going to be some surgery necessary that will put him on the sidelines for a little bit. We thought about what to do with this. We're going to pre-tape as many shows as we humanly can, but the problem is we also don't know how long recovery is going to be. So that puts the matriarch front and center. So what's going to have to happen is she's going to have to grow a white beard, which is actually already halfway there anyway.
At my age, yeah. But I don't know if it's white or not.
But the point is that, no, we're going to so you might hear a bit of a change. Rest assured, as soon as Mr. Jack McFarland, the patriarch, can get back and get into this, he will want to secretly or not so secretly. The growing season has been a source of levity and a source of... it's been a coping mechanism for my dad through all of this. And so we are anxious to have him back. We also, too, might be completely jumping the gun here. This might not affect him in any way whatsoever. Yeah,
so stay tuned.
Yes, exactly. Stay tuned. Okay. Yeah. Now, rest assured, let's say he's not in the room. Sorry, wrong. Let's say he's not on the mic. I tell you something. This coot is going to be in the room.
Oh, for sure.
And he's going to be like, typing or texting or doing hand signals. He's going to have pieces of Bristol board held up saying like,
a whiteboard.
Coach, put me in.
I don't like being benched.
All right, Mom, up to bat here. Don't soil your pants because they're white. This is your first up to bat here, making sure that you take more of a active role here. Easter and go.
One of the first things I always wondered, why does the date change? Doesn't happen with Halloween or Christmas or Canada Day. The date of Easter is determined by the first Sunday after the first full moon after the spring equinox.
Okay, hold your horses here. It's after?
Yes.
Okay.
I had to read that a few times to make sense of it.
Run that down again for me.
Easter is on the first Sunday after the first full moon after the spring equinox. Easter can move anywhere between close to the end of March to close to the end of April.
This feels like Eid.
Yeah, well, it is. And I didn't have a chance to research it, but I think Passover and Ramadan follow somewhat the same type of thing.
When I was teaching drums full time, when I was not landscaping in a former life, I had many students that were of Muslim descent that practiced the Muslim religion or Islam. Pardon my butchering of that, because I am not I do not subscribe to that religion. But the point being is I had many students that do. And every year that I would say, oh, so when's Eid this year? Because it's a moving target.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's after you clean the socks on the Sunday after the hurricane with the rabbits.
Yes.
Speaking of the rabbits, where does this come in?
The rabbits come from Northern Europe, and we're going back to ancient times.
That's a heck of a commute, by the way.
Yes, before Christianity, and especially in Germany.
Does Das ist a German rabbit?
Das ist ein Osterhasi. No.
What?
Idea what
that.
She said, Maddie.
Okay.
What is that? No. What's an
Osterhasi? Is Easter Bunny. Okay, for you German speakers, I probably butchered that. But in whatever religion they were following, the goddess of fertility was female, and her name was Oster, which is German for Easter. Well, she had the name before Easter. And her animal symbol was a bunny or a rabbit, because what do they do best? Jack?
Procreate.
Yes, and what do you call baby rabbits?
Fluffles.
No. No, you don't.
No.
A fluffle's a group of rabbits.
Yeah, what do you call them?
Are they kits? Kits?
Close. Kittens.
Close. Get the heck out of here.
Yeah, kittens. Yeah.
Okay, so my kitten wants to eat the bunny's kitten.
I don't. Oh, really?
Well, Cole, the cat, loves anything that moves rodent-wise.
Okay.
Let me tell you a little story about Cole
rabbits
the cat.
Rabbits are rodents.
And then we'll get back to...
Yeah, why we do the eggs and nests.
Okay, hold on a second. So speaking of the cat... Cat loves to be outside. Cat wants to be outside more than the cat wants to be inside. So the problem is, for the first year that Cole was allowed outside, he didn't realize, we've got a brain the size of a thimble here. He didn't realize that he could escape the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Then he realized. And we're like, uh-oh. Because Cole's wonderful. He's awesome.
Yeah, okay, he's a family member.
He can be a real brat sometimes, but he's awesome. So we've actually put up, our backyard now is Jurassic Park.
Yeah,
we have an electric fence up with this cat. Yes, we're a collar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been collared,
He's been collared, yeah. Okay, so sorry, bunnies, nests, eggs, go.
So in their ancient religion, or not really the ancient religion, but the legend was built that the Osterhasi, the Easter bunny, comes on Easter Sunday morning and lays eggs. Okay, so this is a magic rabbit that lays eggs. So the little German
biologically, there's all kinds of wrong with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Anyhow, the little kids in Germany, before Easter Sunday, would go out into their gardens, I guess, and make nests of grass so the Osterhasi could lay the eggs there. That's where the chocolate eggs come from and everything else. I don't think the eggs that the Osterhasi was laying were chocolate, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very
boring.
No!
Hey,
I like this.
Wait a minute. Okay? So you have Valentine's Day in February, a really dreary month. So somebody decides to sell chocolates and flowers in Valentine's Day to up their sales. The same thing with Easter, with the chocolate eggs.
All I know, Matt, is there's 19 million turkeys out there that really don't want to celebrate Easter.
I know.
On. You know what, though? We are an anomaly here.
For turkey?
Because turkey's not necessarily the thing, isn't it?
Lamb and ham.
And fish, isn't it? No,
well,
fish is...
Lamb and ham.
So it's an ham holiday.
Yeah.
It's an
spam.
Yeah. No, I don't think they're serving spam at Easter. I've had spam.
Okay.
Nothing.
But the point being is that, the turkeys, I don't, my thought was that Thanksgiving's the turkey.
Thanksgiving
thing.
And Christmas, yeah.
Yeah.
But
again, you know what's funny, man? I'm not a fan of lamb at all.
No, I'm not either.
Not a deal.
No.
I just cannot
even spring lamb.
It,
no.
I just
no.
can't even. Wait a minute. What's the difference between a spring lamb and a. And
I think a spring lamb would be more
born
tender.
In the spring.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And if it's from New Zealand, it's a New Zealand spring lamb.
Oh,
that makes it even better.
All right. I'm cutting both your mics.
Jack, could you talk about hydrangeas a bit?
Oh,
sure.
Why?
Do you know what, Matthew?
There's too many hydrangeas being sold.
They're very pretty,
though. What is really unusual? Okay, you go to a store and you buy a hydrangea these days. It's roughly $45 to buy a decent one.
Wait a minute. It's for Easter?
This is for Easter.
Mm-hmm. Talking about, like, the floral hydrangeas?
Macrophyllas. Hydrangea macrophyllas. There's your Latin alert.
Thanks. $45 is light.
You think so?
Oh, it's light.
We just saw them over in the store and they were $45.
What store?
Fortino's?
Fortino's, yeah.
Garbage.
Really?
Well, you tell me. You're a horticulturalist.
I understand, but they're not necessarily using them for planting outdoors.
Okay, hold up a second. Slow down. All right, we're gonna get back to you, but again, growingseasoncanada.com, and this is a growing season, and you know that we take the long way to get anywhere. So I had a customer. I did their landscape design and install last year. Saw her at the bus stop. She came over. She said, listen, let me ask you a question. She said, how come is it that I would go and buy shrubs and perennials from either the grocery store pop-up greenhouses or whatever during the on season, or the big box store nursery center areas, and those would be continually dying and they would never thrive, and yet you go and you supply me shrubs and perennials from your supplier, and I don't have any problems taking care of them, and they thrive. And I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is...
You would care on the bottom end, right?
Yeah.
As they come in.
Completely. So here is what I always recommend to clients, all right? Mom, I've told you this before. If you're going to go buy a TV and you're not quite sure what you need, you go to Babe Lore Radio.
Yeah.
Now, the reason is these are TV people.
Yeah, they are
AV, audiovisual experts. They're going to tell you exactly what you need for the size of your room, for the lighting conditions. Yes?
Yes.
When it comes to buying a car, you don't go to Costco.
No.
Would go to a car manufacturer who are experts.
Yes.
The same thing happens with perennials and shrubs. And the reason why the grocery stores and the big box stores do this is because you're already there and they got you.
Yeah.
Right? But if you're looking for vitality, longevity, all of these things in your plant materials that you're buying, that you're purchasing, you're best to go to a grower because you're going to be getting a higher quality product, probably at the same price.
Or maybe a little more, but it's been
cared for properly. Yes?
Or
yes.
Even when they come onto your sites, listeners, they are taken very well care of. That's not very good English, right? They are taken care of at our own property before they ever get to your job site. And that includes the nursery that we're buying them from.
And let me tell you, I got a story here. Buyer beware. I opted to not go to a urologist for my vasectomy and instead went to a plumber, and it turned out disastrous.
Wonderful.
That's just wonderful.
So, Maddie... Hortensia.
What's the blowtorch for? Why are we doing this?
Oh, man. Hortensia or Seven Barks. Hortensia or Seven Barks. You're interrupting me, Matthew.
Yeah.
When you buy them in the store, so you know what Hortensia and Seven Barks are?
Hortensia is, it's a horror show that lives at camps. Hortensia.
Hydrangeas.
No.
Yes.
That's hydrangea.
No, Hortensia.
What's hortensia?
That's the nickname for your hydrangeas.
Nope, it's hydrangea. That's a stupid name.
Okay, Seven Bark. How about that one? Do you like that one?
Seven Bark? Why?
That's because of...
You got seven sides?
Seven layers of bark.
That's it. He's got it.
It has seven layers of bark.
Speaking of hydrangeas, your brother Pat was out front of your house today. He's looking at this, at your quercifolia, at your hydrangea quercifolia, your oak leaf. He's like, hey, I'm thinking about pruning this right now. I'm like, you keep your dirty hands off of that hydrangea. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Speaking of Seven Bucks, go.
So when you're going into a store and you are buying a hydrangea, a potted hydrangea, if you want to give it as a gift, you want to take it home to celebrate it, to celebrate with you over the holiday season, Easter, make sure that there's five blooms or more. Some are open, some partially not. But if you want to have the pinks, for instance, you would wonder how they did it. The pinks would be done because they use some sort of a lime product on the bottom end before they ever send them out to you. And if they are doing it in the blue tones, Matt, they would use aluminum sulfate. But anyways, moving along, never purchase a plant that is wilted. Make sure that it has weight to it. What do I mean by that, Matthew?
Okay, this actually goes for great little tip, Dad. Thanks. Actually, this should be tips for success from the growing season, to tell you the truth. But the point is that the reason why the plant needs to have weight to it is the weight of the plant is an indication of the level of care. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Because
oh,
if
yeah.
you pick this up and it's got some weight to it, chances are that, thank you, Mom, this plant's been watered, right? Which is what we find at big box stores and grocery pop-up stores when it comes to their nursery area. These things are not adequately watered. And the ability for your plant to thrive in your garden is a direct relation to the level of care it experienced at its former home, right? At its foster home.
Yeah.
Because you're now the owner.
Yeah, the forever home.
And you also must realize that this plant that you're buying, that you're taking from the store to your home, is perfectly, you're perfectly capable of planting it on the outdoors after the frost, there are danger of frost is gone, Maddie. Or that would be roughly the end of May. But when you take it outdoors, make sure that you leave it in the pot, put it into a part shade environment during the day, and do this for roughly 1 week. Why, Maddie?
This is what we call acclimation. So many of our listeners right now would be very close to getting their seedlings, which are plants that are started indoors. They would be beginning to acclimate them to the outdoors. Here is how you do this. You wouldn't just open up your sliding door and take your very, very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Tender.
Thank you, Mom. Good word. Very tender little seedlings. You wouldn't just move them outdoors and that would be it. The problem is that these things are not accustomed to the intensity and the illumination of actual sunlight, as well as you're dealing with temperature fluctuations and wind. So what you need to do is you need to bring them out onto your back deck into a shaded area for 4 or 5 hours. Or wait, sorry, 2 hours the first day, then you bring them back in. Then you put them back on the deck the next day, providing that it's, you know, fairly similar weather for 4 hours. And you keep doing this. It's an acclimation process. You would do the exact same thing with your hydrangea that you received for Easter.
Yeah. And your lighting indoors is 1,000 times less than what you're seeing on the outdoors of your outside of your home. So you must take that in consideration.
Excellent. Awesome. How often have you received Easter hydrangeas? I have never received.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember ever planting them outside afterwards, though. But
yeah.
I've had success with roses and that. And Matt, what about Easter lilies?
Well, Easter lilies, hold up a second while we're on this topic, and then we'll get into Easter lilies here. I was actually walking up the front walkway to your place. You guys have fall mums still in your flower beds from last year. Is this in hopes that they were going to come back?
Yep.
Or right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, we've had one come back. Continuously.
Not very often, but sometimes we will get them to come back.
And you know, listenership, for those that, because you would now be probably starting to get out into your gardens, remember the rule, right? 10 degrees Celsius over the course of 7 days. That would be daytime temperatures, preferably no temperatures below the freezing mark overnight for the course of that time. Then you can begin getting into your gardens, providing that they are dry. You don't want to be getting in there and clumping around when it's super wet. And how do we know that it's super wet? Reach down, grab yourself a handful of soil, give it a squeeze. If that soil leaches water all over your hands, two things. A, you should probably go in and wash your hand. Okay, and then B, it isn't ready yet. But the point here is many of our listeners would probably still have fall mums in their flower beds.
Yeah.
We rarely have them survive. Now, we have had it in some cases. Even if you are in areas that are a 6A or a 6B hardiness zone, these things still just do not seem to thrive over the winter.
No, they're mordens, right? That's what they're not. You wouldn't believe how tender they actually are. So if you have an area that you put them into in the fall, let's say protected, your chances are, 10%?
Matt, how do you pick a perfect Easter lily?
Well, what you would do is you'd find a woman named Lily, and she could probably direct you how to do this.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. All right. First of all, again, got to have some weight to it. Go into the store. Yeah. Preferably go into your local garden center. They're going to be happy to see you. These big box stores have been making money all the way through the wintertime. Your garden centers have not been. Go into a garden center, right? Lots of flower buds with only one or two open flowers is what you're looking for. The reason being is that if all of these flowers are open, you're already on the other side of this thing's life cycle. Yes?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
It's the same thing when it comes to poinsettias. You're almost better to sort of bring these things in slightly green or slightly not as vibrant as they would be. And then you hope to have that occur over the holiday season. Yes.
And remember, listeners, even in the best of situations, you're only looking at 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, not necessarily.
Yes.
My wife had a poinsettia hanging around for like 2 years now.
It isn't an Easter lily, though.
No, but it also, its color went to green.
Yeah. Okay,
but the point is, it was hanging around, all right? If you pay more for these, you're going to get better quality. What you are looking for with this is you are looking for a well-established root system and a very, very high rate of vitality and thriving. Again, a garden center will provide you with this more than other places. Place the sucker in bright light, but not full sunlight. This is the same thing that we keep talking about when it comes to houseplants. They want diffused light. Do not place this in your west-facing window or in your whatever, southwest-facing window. You're going to blast the snot out of this thing, Mom.
And what animal is Easter lilies toxic to? Fairy.
Cats.
Yes.
Cat. Yeah. And never fertilize your Easter lily while it's blooming.
I'm going to tell you something right now. Listen, here's what you don't want to do right now. Don't fertilize anything.
Yeah, you're right.
Here's why. It's funny how many clients are like, what can I do? Don't fertilize anything right now. You need to be going with what the season is already doing. We're getting close to the time of fertilizing, but not right now. Things are just starting to wake up. This is not the time. I know that you're excited. I get it. But this is not the time, especially too. We talked about on our low light houseplants show is that fertilizer with houseplants is almost double the strength at half the application because it's in this little pot and you can burn the root system up. All right, all that much more on the other side. This is the growing season brought to you by growingseasoncanada.com. We are celebrating spring and rabbits and Easter and Cadbury.
And the show continues. This is Lynn from The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Enjoy your Easter egg hunt.
That's fantastic. There it is.
I love it, Mama.
Good job.
Yeah.
Directly after the show airs, you can click on Listen and Watch. Allows you to hear this show in its entirety, plus much of our back catalog, as well as the watch part is becoming more of watchable. Again, my segments with the Weather Network airing in the mornings are going to be uploaded there the instant I have them in my hot little hands. What ends up happening with the Weather Network is I usually insert my stuff into what they call a playlist. So I have the link and I can attach it to the website so you can go there and look. And we're going to be chatting about all things celebrating spring. The goal here is to have the segments for the spring season on the Weather Network tie into the Celebrating Spring and the radio shows for the growing season. This being a way of expanding upon the topics, because for the Weather Network, I got about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. I got to get in, get out, get paid. Yeah?
Fuck. Yeah. Well, you're talking. We're having an issue, man. Right? Oh, my goodness. Can you talk fast?
Yeah, you're really speedy.
So, all right, Pops, you're up.
Mama, thank you. You did really good on the first half. We appreciate it. Give me a little bit of hand.
Mama. Yeah, that's right. It's right. Shave your beard. Yeah.
So I'm not benched for the rest of the season.
No, you did. So let's hit lawn a bit, Maddie, if you don't mind.
You should hit nothing.
Okay, gently caress the lawn with moving forward.
With consent.
Okay, so listeners, we're going to do a little bit of celebrating spring again.
I wondered why you were so quiet on the first half.
I know, it's all because of your ma.
It felt, didn't it feel refreshing, Ma?
I don't know. A little nerve-wracking for me. I'll get used to it. It's a little different doing this than talking in front of 30 kids and telling them that, yes, playing volleyball will be fun and they really don't want to.
What's worse?
I think the kids, they can be brutally honest. Mrs. McFarland, are you having a bad hair day?
Really? Did they ask you that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, listeners, because there hasn't really been a lot of snow this winter so far, you are probably not going to experience any sort of mold issues. That's a cold weather thing. So that won't be happening.
Yeah. And the other thing is that many of our clients are unaware of the fact that snow mold can be an issue for those that suffer from allergies related to mold.
Yes,
you
it
know,
can be.
I have so many clients that would call me in years past and say, you know, my throat is sore. I got a little bit of a runny nose. Is this a cold? And now, granted, I'm in no way a medical physician. Do not trust my medical recommendations in any way. That little mole on your neck, you should probably get it looked at.
Yeah.
Okay. But the point is that the snow mold is a factor in contributing to early spring sickness. There are some people that are very, very affected by
major allergies going on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
But this time of the year is an excellent time to check to see if you have a lot of white grubs. So take your spade, dig down, you know, the depth of your spade. And if you have 4 to 6 or so of the white grubs that you see there, they are the larval form of the Japanese beetle and the, what's the other one?
The Schaefer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, what they're going to end up happening is they're going to become the adult form of those Japanese beetle. You don't want that.
Question for you, Dad. While you're on the topic of it, you brought it up. Not my fault. I know it's probably going off board, but I don't care. Grub damage, grub issues on the lawn. Is there any way of fixing this naturally? I know you're going to say nematodes, which for our listeners that haven't heard this before, nematodes are it's like a small little worm creature.
Go ahead. It's basically a small, let's think of it about a microbial. It's really tiny. It has this little tail on the bottom, but what it on its bottom is its body. And yes, it can jump, but it's not going to jump so high that you're going to notice. But what happens, Matt, is as it moves through the soil, it will come across these grubs. It will either go through an orifice of some kind, I'm not going any deeper than that, or it will make a small little slit. And as it goes inside, Matt, it releases some sort of a bacteria or something that it will help to deteriorate, break down the inner tissue of that particular insect.
Okay, so fine. We're going to take the nematodes out of it, ladies and gentlemen. This is akin to me bringing a lit torch into a gasoline factory when it comes to my dad. Anytime we get the chance to talk about nematodes or azotobacters, and he's jumping up and down like a freak. But my point is, besides the nematodes, I was always under the impression that the wetter your lawn is, the more hydration is in there, the less of a hospitable environment this is for larvae. Yes?
Yeah, you want to got to remember, as the summer moves along, what happens is that this lawn of yours, if they're hanging out in your lawn, they're munching on the roots, and you'll notice when you go to pick up the lawn turf, it'll literally pull away just like a carpet.
That's generally the larval form of one of these beetles.
White grubber.
Japanese beetle.
Yeah, okay. One of the things, too, that I was telling my kids is the beetle, pardon me if I'm incorrect, Mom and Dad, I'm sure I'm not, but the point is, beetle's the largest insect family on Earth, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And again, so ladybug, one of the things that my customers never sort of link, ladybug's a beetle.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
This is a beetle.
Yeah.
Right? And the Japanese beetle is also a beetle, but your June bug, spoiler alert, is a beetle.
Yeah, a deadly one.
So I don't want to get too far.
Everything's a beetle.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole, but you can buy these globes, and they're usually grub out or Nema globe or something like that. And they're
Nema globe.
Nema globe.
Who came up with that?
I have no idea. Terrible
advertising.
Not terrible. Stop. That's fantastic. They're nematodes, and you buy the nematodes and a Nema globe.
Yeah.
$20 to $45 is what you're going to pay for these at Canadian Tire, Amazon, Home Depot, and so forth. But Matt, they come in lots of 5 million. And they're in this, as they say, they kind of hang out, and you put them in your fridge in these little globes. Remember, no longer than about 2-3 weeks in your fridge.
And that's it.
And that's it, man.
Okay, so then hold on a second. Question for you. So, like, and you wouldn't probably see the logistics on the other end of it, the importing, exporting, all that stuff, but Amazon has these things in a warehouse somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't last long.
How are they storing them without spoilage?
They don't have soil. They come in a little
spoilage.
Spoilage. Okay, so the actual material with inside that globe is generally a clay product of some kind. Even I've seen them with sponges, okay? So the little nematodes will hang out there, and you buy them in lots of 5 million, and then they are applied accordingly. And you can 5 million to cover about 1,600 square feet.
Really? That much?
Now, yeah. when you apply them, read the instructions on the globe.
Yes.
There are some negatives.
Yes. You can't put them on cereal.
Definitely not. No.
Maddie,
no.
There are some negatives. First of all, they will not affect earthworms. That's considered impolite. But they do work on other pests in your soil, including chinch. And by the way, don't worry about those guys because they don't show up till June. But Matt, not all of these different species of nematodes work on all particular pests. So in other words, some nematodes might work on one pest than otherwise. Some will work on others.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking about nematodes now for 42 minutes.
So no, we have not. But let's move on.
See what happens here?
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know what you want to do. I just know that right now, listeners, people are out there worried about crabgrass and things like that. Don't worry about it. And honestly, as the growing season, we do not like to apply chemicals. But if you must, we're not using the name. It would have to do it while the forsythia is blooming.
Can't
oh, okay.
Or the
spring.
Our friend that shows up every spring that's yellow, Lynn. What is that?
That's yellow.
Yes, witch hazel.
Oh, no,
witch hazel.
On the ground, everywhere.
Oh, dandelions.
Yes.
Okay, because the first thing I thought was forsythia again.
We don't use any chemicals on, especially for crabgrass preventer, because it's harmful to bees and worms, okay?
Yeah.
But if you look at when we go to move into the gardens, Matt, what happens is that we always would use a large tarp to throw the garbage that we are taking off, the ends that we are pruning, any weeds that we would pull and so forth. But the rest of anything else that's left in that garden, especially the leaves from last fall, are cultivated in. But we try to keep the mess down. We don't want a bunch of dirt between all the cracks so that you end up with a bunch of weeds come next summer.
Yeah, well, that's a real awful job, weeding a patio.
It's brutal. Okay, so one of the things, too, while we're on that topic is we should maybe not be talking about the soil in between the interlock because we are literally taking work from people. There is a percentage or there is a number of contractors out there whose job is to power wash the cracks of your interlock, blowing the polymeric sand out and then reapplying it. This is a way of sort of sprucing up or bringing back to almost new an interlock patio. Many of these landscapers are now offering a power washing service wherein they blow the cracks of your patio out to be able to reapply polymeric sand.
Such a mess though, man.
Oh, it's gross.
Yeah.
It really is. Honestly, ladies and gentlemen, if you're thinking about doing this, the best time to do this would be either before, if you've got flower beds around your patio, either before you put your annuals in or before things begin to come out into leaf, or so that would be early spring, or in the fall, just before you're going to put things to bed, because it just makes a complete soppy, awful mess.
Yeah. So, Mom, as you first step into these garden beds, what are two items that you should be looking out for to do no damage moving forward?
Your spring bulbs. And one of the things you do is move the leaves away from what you've mulched around in your garden so that the bulbs that are underneath can get the light and the warmth of the sun that will make them come up sooner. And hostas, watch where you walk and stomp because you're going to damage these things.
Again, just don't the go leaves, in your flower bed.
Yeah,
right
the leaves
now.
Are very tender and you start stepping on them, the plants are going to look deformed.
Ouch. And another thing is, with all these bulbs that you have put in, say, last fall, they've been in there for years.
That the squirrels
have
eaten.
You must remember that all these bulbs come up in a certain sequence. So you will get your snowdrops, your bluebells, your muscari, your crocus, all these daffs. Hyacinth, don't you want to see those not being all damaged and stepped on?
I agree.
So this is something that I really get angry when I go in and I see people stomping away in all this work that we have done in the previous season, right, Matt?
I got to tell you something. As a landscape installer, as a contractor, I find the early spring bulbs annoying. I find them to be an annoyance. And again, the reason being is I'm not necessarily looking at it from aesthetics. I'm looking at it from when I go in and do an install, I'm always
having to move them.
Having to move them or pull them out.
Unless you have flex spaces.
Yeah, but my customers never have that.
Well, we're going to have to introduce it to them, Matt.
But it's just, again, it's one of these things where they're never not an annoyance when it comes to an install. At your own property or whatever, I totally get it. But man, coming in and, hey, do you think you can try to save some of the bulbs? You got a skid steer. You got a mini excavator. We're not saving any bulbs. They're going in the bin.
You know what, Matt? I got some bad news for you.
Yeah.
Once we're finished doing the rest of the work at our house this year, you're putting in a bucket load of bulbs in the fall.
Oh, great.
So, cool. Mom,
I quit.
Okay. Mom, moving forward, you're in these gardens now and you want to divide your perennials. Is it a good time right now to do it?
Well, yeah, early spring. I mean, obviously not when it's super cold. It is a good time to divide perennials. And what I would like to do when I do it is, first of all, I want a sharpened, disinfected spade.
Why?
Well, it just makes it easier to do the job.
Why does it have to be disinfected?
Well, you just don't know. If you haven't didn't do it at the end of the fall, you don't want to spread disease.
This is, and again, wonderful points all across the board. The idea is that when we talked last about celebrating spring, we were talking about how if it's too early, again, 10 degrees over the course of 7 days, daytime temperatures, as well as preferably not to have nighttime temperatures into freezing. What we are waiting for is the insects that would be in your, in and around your gardens or leaves or whatever, we're waiting for them to wake up and leave. And then you can get your leaves out. So here's my point. We talked about, well, what can you do in the meantime? One of the things was to sharpen your shovel. How many times have I received an email since from people saying, wait a second, sharpening shovels? Yes, sharpening shovels.
Okay, so Maddie, when you're doing the dividing of your perennials, normally speaking, you would cut it into, you would dig down into the perennial. Let's take a hosta, for instance. And you would split it into either 2-4 pieces, depending on how large a plant you want moving forward.
Dad, how do you know?
How do you know
if it's 2 or 4?
Because you look at the plant size. And if it's only, say, 6, 8, 10 inches across, then I would only cut it into two and leave one behind.
Right.
But if you've got something that has a spread of roughly 18, 24 inches, man, there's 4 plants, and boy, what a return on your investment.
I don't care how big they are. At your place, your touch of class hostas, each of them are being split into 42.
Okay.
What about 42?
What about Godzilla?
You have a Zills too?
No, I have a Godzilla bleeding heart. It's huge.
No, don't care about that one.
So while,
touch of class is what I want.
While I'm not going to get into all the perennials that you could divide in the spring, we can get into no touch of class. Oh, really, you can have a few touch of class.
Goes out to the hosta.
Hold on a second. Stop. And then we'll get back to you. I wasn't even sure what you're talking about. Listeners, Google touch of class hosta.
How about Captain Kirk?
Also really good.
Yeah, we have a Captain Kirk.
The touch of class are gorgeous.
Dynamite. So, Matt, I'm not going to go through the whole list, but let's just say there's a few that I like. The anemone, the balloon flower can be done. All your bee bombs, your bleeding hearts, they can all be split into other sections, giving you more plants. Of course, any of your ferns, they can get hit. But, you know, your mums from last year, who bothers?
Milkweed.
milkweed is another good one.
Yeah. Milkweed is getting more and more popular. I have clients that specifically ask for this. One of the things that happens on a growing season console is if we are headed towards a landscape design, if that's the feeling that we're getting, I begin asking a series of questions like, you know, do you have small kids? Do you have pets? That begins to eliminate a certain percentage of shrubs that would be deemed poisonous. Do you have any favorites, plants that mom and dad planted or whatever? And when I'm doing this list, almost to a person, they say, hey, can we make sure that we're encouraging pollinators? Can I get some milkweed?
Which is
even
good.
Even people that have called themselves amateur gardeners or not really gardeners, they know the name milkweed. That's a really good sign.
Yeah, it is.
That's a really
good
thing.
It's the name of the one with the orange bloom on it. I like that one in particular.
Is that the swamp milkweed?
I got my wife Cinderella, which is a pink one, which is kind of cool. I'd have to go look at the orange one. But again, the issue, you know, it's funny because we're jumping into landscape designs here for the season. And every time that we go and look at a brand new family of plants, Dad, we were just looking at phlox a couple days back. And over the winter, the phlox list exploded. Like, what are this? I haven't even seen some of these things before, right? So the hybridizers get really busy over the off season, Mom.
And there's also some perennials that should not be divided in early spring. Bearded iris is one. Yeah. Well, I like iris. Yeah. I think they're beautiful. Foxtail lilies, don't know what that is. Oriental poppies and peonies.
What
I
about
like
the creeping phlox, Lynn? Do it until the fall.
Yeah.
Now, when you get into the oriental poppies and the peonies, here's my thought on why you shouldn't be splitting them now, because they bloom so soon after this, right? So one of the things that my dad always says, and it's such a good, succinct, elegant way of saying it, okay? Plants bloom when everything else is taken care of.
Yeah.
Okay.
In perfect harmony.
Sexual relations happen when the plant is properly nourished, proper amount of light, the whole thing, proper vitality, proper health. And they're like, you know what? Now I'm ready to try to procreate. Yes.
This is great, a meal certain amount of energy.
And a bottle of champagne.
Yeah. Yes, what I'm saying is that in the case of your peonies, and I don't even know why you plant them, but whatever.
I like peonies.
In the case of your peonies, if you begin splitting them now, these suckers begin blooming very soon afterwards. And you're stressing them out. They're not going to want to bloom. Yes?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you must take something into consideration, this is it, listeners. There are certain perennials that should never be divided at all. At all.
Like?
Baby's breath. I mean, you don't plant it much. But Batisia matis, one we use, candy tuft, okay? Most clematis know the group, okay? That's another one. And euphorbias, Matt, we don't do a lot, but we do use them from time to time. The flax, you got to be careful with those. Foxgloves, there's another one. Lupins, monk's hood, rosemary, Russian sage, Matt, trillium. Don't normally touch them at all.
We haven't planted a trillium.
I did in the past, Matt, a lot of trilliums. Yeah. Even at Danbrook's, they have trillium.
Yeah, they have trilliums.
Yeah.
But we haven't, 20 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We planted some at Lang, too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, Mom, this is for you. Person goes out into their garden and they're starting to get really frisky and doing everything possible to make this thing look decent for the upcoming season. Should you be cutting back perennials? And is there a certain time frame?
Well, they say not to cut perennials back in Ontario till at least mid to late April.
Why?
Well, because the insects are still sleeping. It depends on the weather. Look at your weather.
Listen, how many things in life are about hurry up and wait?
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Right? So we deal with this. This is a wonderful tie-in. We deal with this same situation when it comes to annuals. I have customers that are jumping up and down. It's the May 24th weekend. I want my annuals in. To which I respond with, here, please sign a waiver. Yeah. Hurry up and wait. Because you got to wait till the first week of June because we've learned. There's always a chance.
Hard for thousands of dollars.
Yeah, listen, the weather is never guaranteed. Look at the winter this year.
None. No winter.
So what's to say that we're not going to have a snowstorm in June?
Could be. Who knows?
But right? For the most part, Matt, the perennials would get cut down to ground level.
Yeah.
Or some of them would even be left in the place just as, you know, the bloom heads and everything start popping up because they look ugly. But we would always use a pair of sharp falcals to start with. And you don't want to damage anything on that plant moving forward. But we avoid cutting off any of the new buds that are forming for this year. So be careful with that. But remember, if it doesn't look bad right now and you just need to give it a light pruning downward, then leave it be or let the branches and the various leaves and stems that are coming up tell you where to cut back this plant.
Yeah,
and a lot of people just don't understand that.
And we're still not there yet as far as pruning.
No,
right?
No.
Absolutely. And you heard us say, right? And the general rule when it comes to pruning is if you're unsure, prune after it blooms.
Yeah.
Right? And that way, we got about 3 minutes 45 seconds. And that way, you're avoiding cutting off any of this year's flower blooms, right?
Yes. So if you're going out and you decide you want your lawn to look the greenest thing going, what we would normally have done in the past was we would use 2177 or we would have used 1864. These numbers don't mean a lot to you. Probably don't care. But these days, Matt, the first number means everything. That nitrogen number is going to give you that green, green lawn. So these days, when you go to buy a bag of fertilizer from your nursery, you will notice that the number might say 30. And it might be 0-0 behind it. Why now, Matt? All of a sudden, after all of these years, we're not using potassium. We're not using phosphorus. Or, Mom, you answer it.
Well, isn't the N at the beginning, is that nitrogen?
That's nitrogen.
No. But why are we not using the...
Well, because there's potassium in our environment.
And phosphorus.
Okay,
and again, too.
Yeah.
Here is... And you heard me make mention when it comes to the fertilizing of your houseplants, even when it comes to your lawn. We always recommend whatever they're saying, do it at half strength right now. I would wager to guess that on the whole, we are using by far and away less fertilizer than we were, say, 20 years ago. I think many people are beginning to understand that you don't necessarily need to have A, all of these lawn amendments, and B, do you necessarily have to have the picturesque lawn on the front cover of a Home and Garden magazine? It's not nearly as important as it was, say, 30 years ago. Yes?
We're even learning to live with dandelions.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, I know. I the love horror. Them,
yes.
But you must remember, when you are applying this fertilizer, be careful because you leave little piles behind. That means you got a lot more nitrogen in place in that one spot and you're going to get burned. But anybody that over the winter has been collecting various things, let's say they've been doing composting all winter long and they have this lovely compost, and or they've been have a big giant pile of grass clippings just sitting on their property, is there anything that we can use that grass clippings for besides spontaneous combustion in the middle of the summer?
Okay. I don't know how much stock I place in this, but according to what my dad's read, this can be used as a rudimentary mulch. Yes?
Yeah.
So here's where I don't place much stock into this, is that I spent years doing lawn maintenance with my Uncle Pat, who runs Best Cut. At the time, it was called Blue Jay Lawn Maintenance. And we avoided at all costs the spraying of any sort of a grass into people's flower beds. And now Jack McFarland is saying, son, it's okay to use the grasses. In my day, which was back when the dinosaurs were happening, to always use grass as mulch.
I am only talking if a person is being careful when they don't let your grass go to seed. That's a major issue.
Say, yeah.
But otherwise,
why?
It can be
why?
Used.
Because it'll grow in your garden wherever it goes sprayed.
Okay, how do you prevent the grass from going to seed?
Cut it regularly?
Cut it regularly.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
But you
got to
understand, Matt, grass clippings attract earthworms, and that's good, right? Because it rots.
Yes.
It's debris.
Yeah.
And it's full of nitrogen, like 4%, phosphorus, calcium, magnesium, all these great things are there.
Yep.
So it can make an ideal fertilizer if you want to throw it and make it in. What do they do when they put it into the sun in buckets and let it rot, and then they make a tea out of it? So it's a fantastic fertilizer.
A lean barrel, I guess.
But Matt, here's a good thing. You're going on about the grass clippings and so forth.
And that is a great place to press pause. We'll talk about it on the other side. We're going to continue with the grass clippings thing here. The views expressed by Jack McFarland are not supported by me. I cannot bring myself to even consider this after years and years of hearing Pat McFarland being like, boy, you better not be putting grass clippings into those flower beds.
I am not putting, you can sprinkle some of that through your flower beds as compost, but that's not what I'm saying. Okay, so normal lawn is roughly in the 6 to 7 pH range, right?
Yeah.
So if you take these grass clippings and you lay them out in an area that you want, you have time, you have, say, a month, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Throw them there in an area that you want to break it all down, because as it decomposes, the pH becomes 8.5 to 9.5.
Alkaline.
Therefore, it releases ammonia as it breaks down, and it kills everything below. And also, let me tell you, I know people are going to hate me for this, all those ones that swear by using cardboard, you know, especially the lasagna treatment.
Terrible.
They said that grass clippings would be a comfortable, you know, way to walk up between beds and in your, like, areas
vegetable
within
gardens.
Your vegetable
yeah.
garden.
Mm-hmm.
And have I tried this? No. I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we've
not on my watch.
No, Matt said not on his watch. But you know what, Matt? I got enough area around here. I might try a spot and see how it goes.
Views and opinions expressed by Jack McFarland do not reflect those of the Growing Season, guys. Yeah, growingseasoncanada.com is the website. Don't listen to what my dad says with this. It's bad. He's bad for you. This is not good.
Sarana's going to hate me on this one.
I can't bring myself to do this. Guys, we always end the show in a very similar fashion. This week would be no exception. What do you call a line of rabbits jumping backwards? Anybody?
No idea.
A receding hairline.
That's cute.
In English, Happy Easter.
In German, Freie Ostern.
In Gaelic, Benachi na Costa Ori.
Jack out.
If you miss any part of our show today or any of our earlier broadcasts, don't panic. Just log on to our website at www.saga960am.ca/podcasts and look for and stream our podcasts of this show and any of our other great programs.